Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Hello, folks, and thank you for once again coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find us on the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. Also, check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, where you can see some of our featured guests and a whole list of our guests that we've had here on the show, as well as the Get Involved page and the Give page, which has some wonderful organizations on there that could use your help and would appreciate it, as do I. And also, of course, visit our affiliates page, for the more you help them, the more it helps out Bard's Logic and increasing the show. So please check that out at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. Check out the GoSun Solar Stove, as well as the Home Green Composter. So check these out. And there will also be some videos on there showing you about those products. So check them out. And so tonight we have on former U.S. Congressman James Traficant, who was in the Congress from 85 to 2002. And, of course, join us here with tonight with Cindy Todd, Kelly Mordecai, and Dan Gray. And tonight we will be talking about a number of guests. And so without any further ado, you can see the description more about our guest on our promo here tonight. But we want to hurry up and get him in. And that is Mr. Traficant. Thank you very much for calling to the show. How are you?
Hey, Robert, this is Jim Condit. If I can stay on longer than maybe Mr. Traficant can, I got to bring him in right now. I just didn't want to come to dead space. So give me a second to bring him in, okay?
Oh, certainly. Thank you.
All right. I'll be right back.
Okay, great. And of course, we've had Jim Condit Jr. on before, running for the Constitution Party against Boehner here in Ohio. We've had interviews with him before on the show, so check those out in the archive while we wait for him to bring Mr. Traficant in. So, as I said, we welcome him to the show. We will be discussing his Project Freedom USA, which is about eliminating the income and payroll taxes, his positions on Obamacare. We'll have questions about foreign and trade policies and the Fed, and we'll also discuss with him ask some questions about the Bilderberg Organization. And so do we have him on, Jim?
Robert, Jim, are you there?
Yeah, I'm
okay.
On.
Congressman Traficant's on the line with you, former Congressman Traficant. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Traficant, for coming to the show. How are you?
Real good. Yeah, glad to be on your show.
Great. It's great to have you on. I've seen some other videos on YouTube and some interviews with you, so I can't wait to talk with you, and I'm sure my panelists who are on the line as well. So we'll run through some questions here that I've got, and then we'll go from there. First off, thanks again, as I said, for coming to the show. So according to governmenttrack.gov, you were considered a centrist Democrat. Most of my audience would say in those days of the Democrat Party are gone, and now the party has been taken over by the liberals and socialists. As a former Democrat, would you agree with that assessment?
Yes, I was very outspoken about it. In fact, I thought the Democrat Party had gone too far, and I think the whole country is going too far. I think we're gravitating even further than socialism with a tax code that's beginning to manipulate the variables of production. And the definition of communism is that the government controls production. And I believe we're almost there with a tax code that manipulates production and controls it. So we're getting dangerous to losing our capitalist posture, and I believe that our America is going to implode, very similar to the Soviet Union. Probably, I predict by the year 2030, Pat Buchanan has predicted now, from what I understand, about 2025. I don't think it could miss unless there's an intervention immediately to move away from this communist program that's developed in this country.
Great, and agreed. We see a lot of folks mirroring that statement. And so what we'll do, as I said, I got a bunch here, so I'll just run through them so we can get our panelists on in good time. When you voted for Republican Dennis Hastert for Speaker of the House in 2001, why do you think that your party stripped you of your seniority and refused to give you any committee assignments?
Well, probably because I voted for Dennis Hastert, who was a Republican. But I felt it was time to bring the House together and to let them know that I felt at that particular point that the Democrats were so far off base that I was so disappointed and disillusioned with them that I would be willing to support the Speaker and let them know that I'd support the Republican Speaker rather than continue to gravitate towards some of the posturing and programs that the Democrats were bringing forward.
Yeah, and bringing things closer to today, we'll speak a little about specifics later. But what is your general take on Obama?
Well, I think he was not wanted. I think the powers that be, the major powers that select our presidents, they wanted Hillary Clinton. And they kept John Kerry out of the race. They kept Al Gore out of the race. I believe Al Gore would have been nominated without question. But the powers that be just kept him out of there. They got rid of Edwards pretty fast, and they probably believed that there's no way this black fellow from Chicago with a Muslim name was going to beat Hillary. And as it turned out, through a number of circumstances and machinations that occurred over that period of time, they end up with Obama. They didn't want him. I believe one thing Obama has done, he's kept us out of war. The warmongers have been pushing very hard to have us move into Iran. He's withstood that, and he's danced amidst the raindrops. But I think his policies have gone too far. He's taken us beyond the bridge of socialism, not necessarily just him, but the Democrats in general. I think Obamacare presents 6 new big taxes most people don't understand. It also makes a mandate that I could never support, forcing people to, in fact, adopt the behavior, whether they want to or not. That doesn't seem to me to be American. And finally, when I looked at Obamacare, I knew it was a tax, strictly a tax. And the Supreme Court, the amazing thing about it was, I ended up approving Obamacare as constitutional because, in fact, it was a tax and is a tax. There are 6 major taxes involved in that. And I think before it's over, you will see an escalation in America's move towards what I consider communism. Look, we've had 17 million people on food stamps. Now we're close to 50 million. You have half of this nation that is dependent. We have a communist tax code, really, literally a communist tax code. If you look at Karl Marx's communist platform, the second plank of that platform is in order to make a nation a communist nation, there must be established a graduated progressive income tax. And that's exactly what we have. So it's not the point now of just taking from the rich and giving to the poor. It's the country that's taking, making the decisions, and we have become the central government of America, not the United States of America. States have become background music in a doctor's office. So as far as, Obama's concerned, what's happening here is we've led our nation to what I consider to be a managed debt economy nation characterized by dependency, massive dependency, dependent on the central government. And that is, in fact, the foundation of the Communist Party, without question. The other thing is the Communist Party said that no one owns property. And if you start to look around at America today, just go ahead and miss your tax payment to the county, and you'll see who owns your house. You rent your property now from the government. The government now feeds us. The government now houses us. More and more people want more dependency. We've got a hell of a mess on our hand with jobs have been exported, and with the policies that the Democrats are pursuing and continuing to beat up on the so-called wealthy, you're going to see an exodus and a departure of wealth from this country. And let me say one thing for all those people that are listening that continue to beat up on the rich. My father was a truck driver. I come from as humble a background as anybody. My dad told me, he said, Jimbo, when I was elected to Congress, he says, I never worked for a poor guy. He said, so be careful about that beating up on those guys who make the investment. Here's a statistic should make everybody think. The top 10% of wage earners in America pay 70% of all income tax. Let me say that again. The top 10% of wage earners pay 70% of all income tax. We're going to drive the money out of the country next. And if you take a look at some of the recent statistics coming out, I think it was just an article in USA Today, that over the past several years, 76 companies left America because of the oppressive tax policies of this country. We're in trouble. There's no question about it. There's no one in Washington that has an innovative program. No one has any kind of a program that, in fact, is what I consider to be ingenious. None. There's no program to intercept, intervene upon what is a inexorable decline. Now, there's no way you can get out of it. You're not going to overcome debt by accumulating more debt, and that's the only problem these people have. As a result, I'm involved very strongly with, as the national director of Project Freedom USA, one of my associates who has arranged this broadcast and who handles some of the press is Jim Condit. And he and I have for years talked about the fact that unless we remove and replace this income tax with a fair consumption tax, America is going to implode. And that's what Project Freedom is. It calls for an elimination of all income taxes, an abolishment of the Internal Revenue Service. It establishes a 15% national retail sales tax, no exemptions. There is a rebate for those people under the poverty level, so they're not hurt. It's not regressive in that regard. And up to the poverty level, they would be, in fact, supported for basic necessities. But there would be no more withholding, no more tax on savings or investment, no more capital gains tax, no more corporation tax, no more tax on Social Security or Medicare, being it from the individual or for the company. You would see American companies coming back home. You would see jobs develop in this country. You would see our massive budget and trade deficits reconciled. And if anybody else has any kind of a program that can, in fact, match that, I want to know what it is. And finally, the last thing, without question, is Project Freedom USA cancels the contract with the Federal Reserve System. The Federal Reserve can stay in existence if they want. We don't want to audit them. We don't want to kill them. They can stay in business as a private entity, but they will not handle the money anymore, nor control the money supply. That will go back under Congress as the Constitution mandated, and we repudiate any interest payments on the national debt immediately. That's the program. And I've been there long enough. I've seen all these politicians talking about cutting spending and targeted revenue increases. Let me tell you what. Every Congress, since I can recall now, 40 years, has talked about raising targeted revenues, taxing the rich, and cutting spending. And none of them have done a damn thing. They have no program. Their only program is to get reelected, both parties. But quite frankly, I think the Democrats have gone off the deep end. I think they've gravitated towards, just let me say it this way, a program that does not seem to be capitalist on its face.
And another big problem that we have, and while you're in Congress, you're a strong opponent of illegal immigration. What are your thoughts on how illegal immigration stands now in America? And do you agree with the way the administration is handling the issue? And what would you suggest would be done differently, including about the illegal immigrants flooding in from the minors that are now flooding in
into this country from the Central America?
Number one, it's a joke. Years ago, I passed a very controversial amendment to a defense bill. The Traffigan Amendment, which was in fact opposed by both the Democrat and Republican Party, stated this, that we remove and relocate 10,000 troops from overseas, relocate them to our borders, and every 6 months revolve and replace them to keep out illegal drugs and to keep illegal immigrants out. It passed the House, and they were all very concerned that I was able to, in fact, influence the House enough to pass that with the opposition of all leaders, Democrat and Republican, and the White House. It went to the Senate and was killed in the Senate, and John McCain was one of the leaders that killed it from out there in Arizona with all his fancy talk about these illegal immigrants. Who knows what the hell side they're on out there. Without that program, I did state that we'd be overrun by illegal immigrants, we'd continue to be flooded by narcotics, which are not domestically produced. You can get heroin on every street corner as easy as you can get aspirin. My God. And they can't stop it now. Now the new ploy is these young kids coming across. Do you think these Central American people are stupid? They know if they send the young people over that the bleeding hearts in America are going to say, well, we have to do something. We just can't throw them out. Let me give you my opinion. It's very cold. It's very hard. But if you come to this country legally and you're one of us, you are one of us. Welcome. We want you. If you come here illegally, you should be thrown the hell out. And there should be no program to allow you to reap any benefits, be it Social Security benefits, be it health care benefits, be it food stamps, be it welfare, be it any type of program whatsoever. And if we do not take care of our own, and if we do not treat the border as the national security front that it is, America is not only going to implode, it's going to implode in a wave of violence before it's all over. Somebody, I predict, will smuggle the components of a nuclear device across our own border and detonate it in our own country against us. That's how crazy this is. And when I look at all of these programs we have, Border Patrol, Homeland Security, we have an open border. What the hell good is having those programs? It's a joke. So I think that Obama and the Democrats, and let me say this, the Republicans, are treating immigration politically. They're both parties are looking for the massive Hispanic vote. They're looking to get majorities in the House and the Senate, and that's a big block of votes. There are some that say the Hispanic vote is now bigger than the black minority vote in America. So they're all looking for it. Who's going to win that vote? Who's going to win that vote? Meanwhile, while they're aiming for political gain, country's going to hell in a handbasket. So the only thing I have to say is there's absolutely no leadership coming out of Washington. This country has gone really to the depths of just a national political agenda. They're just looking to get reelected. And I think that was evident when they had this fiscal cliff problem and they appointed that super committee, and that super committee failed to do anything because they were afraid if they did, they wouldn't get reelected. So as a result, I guess the fiscal cliff, we went off the fiscal cliff, and I guess you don't hear about it anymore. All they're talking about now is a new 10-year deficit reduction plan where they'll borrow money for 10 more years. These people have basically put a gun to our head.
Yeah, and in Pat Buchanan's book, The Death of the West, he warns of the dangers of vast immigration, you know, illegal immigration and multiculturalism. And I believe he contends that this leads to the deterioration of nature by the new immigrants, or in this case immigrants, not integrating themselves through the American language and culture, thus making us lose our national identity. Would you agree with that assessment? You believe that's happening in America now?
It has gone so far that I was called a bigot and all kind of names in Congress because my amendment to relocate troops and put them on our border and keep illegal immigrants and drugs out of our country. But just let me say this. This isn't an immigration problem. This is illegal immigration. This is illegal immigration. How much more can American people take? If it's illegal, stop it. How can you accept it? How can you continue to let it fester? You're going to have to do something on that border, and you can't have one Border Patrol agent for every 2 miles of border. I mean, you have basically people running across the border with backpacks full of heroin, 30, 40 pounds. Believe me, just running across the border. It isn't as sophisticated. It isn't rocket science. Yeah, there's some tunnels, and they have many different ways of penetrating our country. But a lot of it is simply individuals running across the border, getting $400 or $500 to deliver 20, 30 pounds of heroin or cocaine.
Yeah. And they're also bringing over diseases that we pretty much eradicated in America.
Well, it sounds tough because now you have the young kids and they say, well, geez, you have no heart. We just can't. Listen, those Central Americans and Mexicans, they're sending across. They're sending across those young kids. They know how to penetrate. They're using every tool at their disposal to, in fact, penetrate this country. We got to stop it. We can't absorb and continue to absorb this type of a cost factor. We must secure our borders. Our borders must be secured against illegal entry and against contraband from coming across our borders, period. Anybody disagrees with that and thinks it's a posse comitatus rule, let me tell you something. The border is a different issue. That's the entry to our national security, our national entity. You must secure it. You must protect it. And there is no protection. You know, we're guarding the borders overseas in the Mideast, in Africa. My God, it's a joke. We have troops falling out of chairs without armrests all over the country. They're going to the theater in Rome. They're going to dinner in Tokyo. They're going to lunch in Germany. Bring them home. Close a lot of these bases overseas. Take care of our country. We have super technology. We can keep an eye on these countries. We don't need the big, massive troop buildups over there. Let's come home and let's take care of our country. And by the way, just think about it. All the troops that are spending their checks overseas, they can be investing their money in America and spending that paycheck over here. So there's a lot of economic advantages to just securing our border in the long run. But what we have is we have a political agenda in force, not a program of national security. And that's the major element of what Congress is about. Congress is to protect us, and Congress is to provide for a venue for economic opportunity by which all of us can maintain and take care of our families, enjoy life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And it's very simple. I keep saying it. Because everybody treats this as rocket science. Well, you can't do this. You can't do that. That's hard to do this. Listen, it's not as hard as anybody thinks. It's just a matter of setting a program and having a strong-willed program that takes care of America and doesn't hurt anybody, but lets everybody else know that America is going to help the world by remaining strong. And what we've done is we just diluted our strength, and we continue to gravitate away from the superpower that we are. We're not the only superpower anymore.
Certainly. I just have one more question before I'm going to bring in the panelists, because a lot of folks on the show, including the panelists, are real strong Newt Gingrich fans. And, you know, as he was Speaker of the House 1995 to 1999, and you were a congressman for the opposition party during that time. I'm sure we'd like to hear, and the audience would as well, what do you remember about Newt Gingrich and those times?
I like Newt. He had a program. May not agreed with everything he advanced, but he had a program. He stuck to it. And he was firm. I thought he was a brilliant guy, and I thought he'd be a stronger candidate than some of the people they've been offering. But unfortunately, he doesn't come across as friendly or as acceptable as some of the others. But I think he's a brilliant man. I think he has a strong program. He's not afraid to speak his mind, and I thought when he was Speaker, he did what he had to do, and I think the contract with America, even though much of it was never put into law, I think a lot of it was very good, and it helped at least to bring some sanity for a period of time to this country. And I think he deserves a little bit of support in helping those very first budget surpluses that we had under Clinton. I think that there was an awful lot of work done by the Republican leadership at that time that made things happen. In addition, there was an IRS reform bill in 98. In my language, the change of burden of proof in a tax case was finally included, and it changed things dramatically for the American taxpayers. Because before 98, in a civil tax case, the taxpayer was considered guilty and had to prove themselves innocent in court. I changed that in 98 with the IRS reform bill and had a tremendous impact. Garnishments dropped from $3.1 million a year to $560,000. Property liens dropped from $677,000 to $161,000. And individual family-owned homes dropped from 10,073 to 57 homes. 57 homes. You see, when the IRS had approved their case, they didn't do too well in court. But right now, let's get the hell out of here. We have an agency. Listen, I want you and your listeners to hear this. They come before Congress and say, without fear, we can't collect taxes. Without fear, fear. What the hell is this? What do we have a government agency that, in fact, espouses policies of fear and intimidation? Let's throw them the hell out. We don't need them. Everybody will pay the tax, flat 15% on all new goods and services, not used, only new. And there'll be a rebate on the bottom for those poor people. The rich people spend more money. They pay more taxes. There are no more loopholes. There's no more 70-some thousand pages of this gobbledygook. It's gone. And we straighten our country out. In addition, we start printing our own money. We control the money supply, and we don't pay interest to bankers. And just let me offer this. I'm going to use the words of a great American, President Abraham Lincoln, when they were discussing the early days of the railroad. And Abraham Lincoln is quoted as saying, why should we get the money from the banks and pay them interest when we can produce the money ourselves and not pay any interest? He spoke a lot of wisdom there, and the Constitution is clear. Congress shall coin the money and establish the value thereof. And most people don't understand this. Our history books don't quite give us the whole story. Ben Franklin says, anybody who believes the Revolutionary War was fought because of taxes on tea is crazy. He said, America issued our own money, and we controlled our own money. And he said the bankers in England went to Parliament, and they lobbied Parliament in England, and Parliament then passed a law prohibiting American colonies to use their own money, forcing the colonies to use the money of the Bank of England and pay interest, and bang, that was your war. And I find it very interesting that the bankers are so strong in history that our history books don't even report it. That's a dead bang quote of Ben Franklin. He said, if you think the Revolutionary War was fought over some bales of tea in Boston Harbor, he said, you're sadly mistaken. He said, when England and Parliament prohibited the use of our money, forcing us under the Bank of England, it was the final blow. That's what really was the key that pushed the colonies over the edge. So that's why you have that language in the Constitution. It's clear. Congress and only Congress shall coin the money, and only Congress shall set and establish the value thereof. And what do? We're a superpower. We're a real superpower. We have a bunch of private bankers controlling, handling our money, and then charging us interest. Now, this is a statement from me you probably heard in the past, so get ready for it. Beam me up. Beam me up, sir. We're so damn dumb, these politicians in Washington could throw themselves at the ground and miss. So I guess you know exactly how I feel. I mean, I just got to tell you exactly why I feel, because I can't believe they're so damn dumb down there. They've become almost un-American as far as I'm concerned.
And as a Star Trek fan, I could definitely appreciate the beam me up. And speaking of that, we'll bring in some other folks. We will bring in the panel.
I don't have too much time left.
And...
So listen, I don't have too much time left. So if you have some questions for me, shoot them fast and let me get moving because I'm going to have to be moving on.
Okay, certainly. And we'll bring them in order that they called in. So go ahead, Cindy, thank you for calling to the show. A quick question for Mr. Trafficant. Go ahead. Cindy?
Okay.
Well,
I'm here.
Okay, go
I'm
ahead.
I'm sorry. Mr. Trafficant, I'm so glad to have you on. And the first thing I was going to ask you was, hey, do you still want to be beamed up? I'll bet you do.
Yeah,
okay. Listen, I hated to see Clinton get all the credit for what Newt did in his time period, too. And that just really gets me. But anyway, I want you to do me a favor. I want to try to get into the head of a Democrat. You got your Blue Dog Democrats, Southern Democrats, Liberal Democrats, your whatever Democrats. But I'm looking at, I want to hear you contrast the average Democrat from the leadership. And I want to know why those average Democrats are so loyal to the party when they should be able to see that they never prosper under a liberal administration except when they're riding the coattails of the, you know, a previous good Republican like Clinton did. But anyway, can you get into the head of a Democrat for me and tell me what makes them tick? Why do they want to be Republican? I mean, why do they want to be Democrat?
Well, first of all, take a look at their leadership. They resemble their leadership or they wouldn't have such leaders. I think that's evident. And if you look back, I like some of their leaders. They were nice people. I thought Jim Wright, a lot of people didn't like him because they said he did certain things. Jim Wright was a real structured guy. He was a little bit more centrist than people thought. Tip O'Neill, he's very affable. But then you start looking at the leadership structure that's gone from there, and they basically said what anybody wanted to hear. They were all left of center so far. I think they were out of sight to a degree, and they've allowed this country to gravitate towards just giving everybody everything they wanted, not realizing that ultimately they were going to destroy the same people they really meant to help. So I think the average Democrat wants to get reelected. I think they see the Republicans as shooting themselves in the foot on a lot of issues, and the American people basically, let's face it, when they look at the Republican Party, you look at the press. The press has basically been knocking the Republicans and supporting Democrats. And to me, I don't understand it. If you look at the abstracts of the Romney-Obama race, you'll see that basically Obama carried more counties. Romney carried more counties than Obama did. But the major concentration populated areas basically went with Obama. You have a strong dependency factor in America now, and people are going to vote for the party that gives them what they want. So the rap on democracy is basically this. When the people learn that they can get what they vote for what they want, not necessarily what's good for the country. And you have that ultimate spiraling, inexorable decline to where the country implodes and breaks up. And I have predicted that now. There's no question in my mind. Unless there's a serious intervention. Now, the thing that bothers me about the Republicans, they too haven't taken some clear leadership roles that they should be taking. For example, with the press saying that who's going to win the Hispanic vote, now you have the Republicans trying to outdo the Democrats to a degree. And on some of these other issues, they're all trying to reform the tax code. How the hell can you reform that thing? You got to throw it out. And I don't see any brilliant program coming from the Republicans either. And one thing I say about Newt's contract with America was a good contract. Even though a lot of it didn't get passed, it made everybody focus on those particular issues, and it mitigated some of the left-wing things that were happening at the time, and it did help Clinton's presidency as far as those deficits were concerned. So I'm just so concerned that the average Democrat has gone too far left. They're just appealing to get reelected. Republicans are recognizing the need to get reelected as well, and they're pushing the buttons for reelection. And I don't think that either party is much different anymore, really. You could talk about some of the issues and talk about abortion and school prayer and the flag and all of these different things. But when it comes down to it, for trade and tax policy, there's not much difference between these two parties anymore. And that's what's bad. I think that before, the American people had a choice. Now, I think America needs a viable, real, independent third party, not a Tea Party
that's
still basically... Tea Party is basically a faction of the Republican Party.
And perhaps the Constitution Party. And thank you very much, Cindy, and we'll be moving along, and Albert bringing in
thank you, Cindy.
Dan here. Thank you very much, Dan.
You're welcome. Thank you. I kind of agree with you.
Well, thank you, Cindy. Hi, it's Dan Gray. I was going to call you Congressman Trafficant, but they stripped you of
Don't
power.
Don't call me name.
I'm going to call you
names.
I'm very glad to see that censure and expulsion and conviction and incarceration has failed to silence your bold rebellion against the entrenched power elites, which I don't care what party you're from, you have a history of doing it. And I haven't agreed with you over the years on every single issue, but you've been very steadfast, and you haven't pulled any punches. And while I think that you've been... a reasonable fella. You've never called them terrible names or threatened them, like some of the people we see in power right now. You did make a difference with the IRS. You did make a difference with your statements and your amendments on the border and illegal immigration. Your stance on abortion was as nearly perfect as if in terms of being pro-life as anybody who's been elected. So I'll call you patriot. And you're talking a lot about the economy, but what it boils down to really is there are rules for America that our founders set, and they're in our Constitution, which has not been obeyed. They're just simply not paying attention to it. So regardless of what party it might be or parties, what about our Constitution? Is there any way that we can simply restore it and not pass new laws at all, just simply get rid of all the laws that don't belong?
Yeah, I think you got to vote a lot of these jackasses out, quite frankly. And I said that while I was in Congress. I was, as you know, targeted by both parties because
yes,
I felt that both parties had missed the boat on that. But you're exactly right. I think if we look, the Constitution is not a perfect document. It allowed slavery. It treated women like cattle and Indians like cattle. I mean, it was wrong. There were a lot of faults to it. But the Constitution as a living document was able to be rectified. But much of the founders and much of the emphasis from the founders, especially on life and liberty and property, you know, happiness was a last amendment to the founders' work on their original construct. It was life, liberty, and pursuit of property. That's how important property was to the founders. And now look what's happened. We rent our property from the government. We don't really own it. We have a custodial title. So I think this, that if we look at what the founders were saying, that from their experience that produced the Revolutionary War, we have to control our destiny. We do that by controlling our money supply. I mean, we can by controlling our finances. That's just common sense. We also have to have a strong defense, and we shall secure our borders. Look at the Constitution. It's quite clear. We should be safe in our own homes from invasion, requiring warrant for probable cause. Now we have the government spying on us.
Well, I was going to ask you about the NSA.
So far, I don't think we can. In fact, we've got to have a drastic change. And I think the change must come first through the attack on what has happened to our founders' future look, our budget, our trade situation. We can't change this trade deficit situation. It's massive. It's bigger than the government's saying. How can you do it? Our products are so expensive. You can't make a profit in America. Our companies have to leave to make a profit. We're in trouble. We should become the tax haven for the world, where companies would be moving into America, but we're not. We're an oppressive, regulatory, burdensome system that has destroyed jobs and has killed investment. And anybody that can't see that is crazy. All these economists. You know, I was just amazed at one thing, Dan, that really got me. When Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Federal Reserve System, actually made this statement. He said, debt is the number one problem in America. But even so, he said, I'm recommending that individuals go out and spend, even if you have to accumulate more debt to get our economy going. I had to say it, beam me up. You had the chief banker of the world saying accumulate more debt because by accumulating more debt, we might spur this economy. Look, I've never seen anybody that was able to overcome debt by accumulating more debt. And America's not going to do it either.
Yeah, we have never said that either.
Having said that, I've had it.
And another thing.
Just let me close with this, though. You said I'm a man of conviction, a man of prison. There were seven people that said they bribed me. There wasn't one single shred of evidence. Number one. Number two, the government said they made no audio or videotapes of me. After a six-year investigation, 250 agents, $25 million, on or about the time the World Trade Center was being attacked and the Pentagon was being bombed. Now what I've found out is they had video cameras in my office. They're going to pay yet before it's over. I was put in prison because I brought home John Demjanjuk, who was convicted of being Ivan the Terrible, and I offended all the big people, and I knew it. I knew I'd be called an anti-Semite. I knew I'd be targeted. But I was willing to do that than let an innocent man die, and it's a travesty what they had done to that man and his family. So my case isn't over, but it has nothing to do with what I'm about. My last bill in Congress was to throw out that communist income tax, abolish the Internal Revenue Service, and replace it with a 15% flat national retail sales tax on all new goods and services with a rebate for those people on the bottom end of the ladder who are, in fact, living in poverty. And unless America does this, America is going to implode. And America must put the money supply back up under Congress.
Because I wanted to go ahead real quick. I just wanted to bring James in here. Go ahead, Mr. Trafficant, and then James, I got your mic. Go ahead, James, Mr. Trafficant.
Well, I don't know if you have anybody else, but I'm already gone by. I've been working all day and night here. I just hope people follow it. I want you to look up www.projectfreedomusa.org. Projectfreedomusa.org. There's a lot of Project Freedoms out there, which I didn't realize, but this is projectfreedomusa.org. Follow it. See what we're doing. Help me. Help me to reach people, to educate people, so these people in Washington realize the American people are fed up. They'll start looking to do what's necessary to straighten our country, and as Dan said, get back towards the Constitution. This is not rocket science. This can be done, and it will be done. I don't know if it will be done in my lifetime, but I think we can be the beginning of it. So I want to thank you for having me on your show. I'm going to have to go now. Maybe I'll come back in the future. And if you have any
further
questions,
I'll try and answer. Yeah, that would be great. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, James.
Thank you. And you have a good night.
He sure can talk.
James, wow. our panelist, James Neighbors, I just opened up your mic. I tried to get you in on time, and I see Kelly on the line too, but I apologize for that. But hopefully, as he said, we'll get him back on another time, and we'll be able to talk with him and have some more questions for him.
It happens. It sounds like he was running a little short on time, and what are you going to do?
I thought we may have had a little bit more time. I knew it was limited. That's why I was trying to rush things through. But hopefully next time we get him on, I'll talk to Jim Condon, who was kind enough to kind of also be at the go-between myself and Mr. Traficant and getting him on the show. So hopefully we'll be able to be in contact and get him on again. Go ahead, James.
Well, what he was saying about the flat tax, I've been I'm a very strong supporter of that idea. I mean, first off, the obvious savings in money with not having to have the IRS. Then, of course, you won't have targeting by the IRS. Well, there won't be an IRS to target anybody. I suppose you might need a small group of people to go out and do some sort of auditing or whatnot like that as far as if people are suspected of never paying sales tax.
You got to make the stores do what they're supposed to do.
Right. So, you'd need some sort of enforcement on the sales tax as far as that goes. But it would be a much simpler thing. I mean, honestly, you could probably turn it over to the FBI, but at any rate, the number of personnel necessary for whoever would be enforcing the sales tax would be much smaller than what the IRS has expanded into their gargantuan form as they are now. And, I mean, it would be a simple paperwork matter. You either have been paying your 15% or you have not. And if you have not, you owe this much money. A much, much easier than our current tax code. I mean, the fact that they have tax attorneys says it all. If you have to have not just one kind of tax attorney. You've got specialty tax attorneys for, small business, large business, corporates. Corporations. I mean, it's ridiculous. The fact our tax code has gotten so expansive, to where you require specialty attorneys says enough right there. I would even go so far as to say that nobody should be tax exempt on the sales tax. You buy it, you pay taxes on it, and that's churches and everybody. There would be no nonprofit organizations. It needs to be fair all the way across the board. If you buy it, you pay taxes on it. Period. End of story. And just to satisfy the people who cry that it's a regressive tax, that it would hurt the poor more. Well, okay, we'll take food off of that. That way there is no tax on food from a federal level. So you can't say you're harming poor people and they can't eat as much. Well, because, we just won't tax food. That would be about as far as I would compromise on that. He was spot on as far as I was concerned on the Democrats. I've got arguments with people, saying that I falsely define liberals as communists. And then I just have to inform them, by the dictionary definition, you are correct. However, the common known liberal in 2014 is a communist. There's just no two ways around it. What a liberal politician wants and what a liberal political supporter desires, the things that they want, they reek of communism, and it's not pretty, and it's certainly not something we should be seeing here in America, really not at all. And, I look forward to the day, when we can look back and laugh because a liberal is somebody that's actually enlightened and actually wants change, you know, for the better, because a true liberal wants to get rid of oppression, whereas a modern liberal of the 21st century, they're all about oppression and control. And it's kind of a sad thing that they've rebranded the word and, you know, really kind of co-opted it for nefarious purposes.
Well, yeah,
and
that,
also
well,
got,
it depends on
go ahead,
Sandy.
I know Kelly wants to chime in, and we also have someone who called in on Skype who'd like to chime in as well. So go ahead, Cindy, then we'll bring in Kelly, and then the Skype caller will have you coming in as well. Go ahead, Cindy.
I was just going to say it depends on the era what is considered conservative and what's considered liberal. The status quo is always considered conservative, and the liberal is the guy who wants to change things. So that has always went up and down throughout history. Your liberals in Rome were not the same as your liberals here. Well, of course they might have been, but you know what I mean? And then the conservatives at another time period in U.S. history, the Republicans were liberals when they first started, you know, and now they're considered conservative. So that's all I want to say.
Got it. Okay, well, at this time I was doing a little call screening here, but at this point we will be bringing in Kelly. Kelly, thank you very much for calling in the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. I always like hearing from Trafficant, and I heard him on WKRCE Cincinnati from Jim Condit, interviewed him, and yeah, it was a kick. He went a little bit more into his story, and now this is a man we just had the honor of listening to, Mr. Trafficant. He went to jail, if you may have looked up, researched, or discovered. They basically ran him out of Congress. When I first heard that, I'm like, gosh, he must have done something right. Sure enough, you know, come to find some other deeper things. And I hope he goes after them, because he didn't know this was going on, but they videotaped him in office. Somebody was spying on a United States congressman. Yeah, he didn't know until after he was put in jail. And there was all sorts of false allegations against Jim. And the reality is he was bucking the system. He was making too much headaches for the powers that be, so they put him in the slammer for 7 years under a frame job. And, you know, some of the questions were in court was, you know, when, what time? You said you saw me dealing drugs in my office. When, who, how, what, where, what time? Do you have, you know, and they kind of skipped around the questions and muddled through it and all that stuff. So, but hopefully someday he'll get a hold of the videotape and find out the day that they finally got out of him in court, that the date and the time that these witnesses supposedly saw this. They go to the video camera, and it never happened, and he starts suing people, and people go to jail for putting him in prison. But this is a man, folks. This is a man who stood up for what he believed, which, you know, a lot of us believe that the banksters are too powerful, the IRS is a game show, too much power, and he stood up against them, and he suffered dearly. I think his wife left him, too. I mean, he's a poor guy. He went through hell. Now, that's the kind of patriots we need to be, if you will, where we're willing to suffer terribly so that we can have great liberty. We just, you know, had the 4th of July. And a lot of men, around 25,000, died in the Revolutionary War. I'm just stunned to have this kind of an example on the show with us, who has paid a very dear price. And it's encouraging to know there are people all over the country that have the same mindset. Luckily, the powers that be don't put people in jail, or somehow they get a good attorney and they prove that the claims are false and the jury can't be convinced. It's stunning. You know, he was talking about the banksters. I just call them the banksters, you know, gangsters, whatever you call them. Well, the banksters, he noted how little it is in the history books, what they have done. That quote from Benjamin Franklin, I just want to dive in and find that and study that. Another concern the colonials had was the East Indian Trading Company, which is what, a corporation? Of course, so you got the banks, you got the corporations, you got the bribing of politicians and yada, yada, yada. Thomas Paine wrote, by the way, Thomas Paine was British, and he came over here. You know, of course, he's the man who wrote These Are the Times, to try men's souls, help motivate Lincoln's army at Valley, or not Lincoln, Washington's army at Valley Forge. But he noted the terrible corruption, Thomas Paine did, of England, just terrible. And so he came over here, and, you know, just something, I don't know how these people do it. I don't know how they congregate. I don't know how they plan and scheme, but they sure do it. The banksters, the politicians, the lawyers, it's disgusting. And it has been missing in history what's going on. And here we are now, back to the same repeat that the founders, you know, even Lincoln was. He was more afraid of the banksters than he was the Southern Army. He also, Lincoln stated that, I fear for my country. There are powerful corporations being set up that will basically turn everybody into slaves. So it's just, oh my gosh, you know, and traffic has stood up to this, and he suffered, and that's what we need to be doing to be more free. And when I get a little more time, I had a hot call this today about a corporation trying to take down the little guy.
Was she
a redhead?
No.
California.
Just kidding.
What? Well, when we got more time, but yeah. it's like, and this engineer that, I'll save it for later, but this is like, oh my gosh. But I'll save it for later, let somebody else make some comments.
Okay, and we did have Joe on the line, so Joe, if you're still out there listening, go ahead and give us a call at 347-945-7428. Again, 347-945-7428. And also, before I bring, it looks like we have Jim Condit on the line. We'll be bringing him in shortly, but first, I want to lead folks over to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. Check out the different pages there, including our sponsors and affiliates page there. And check out the Go Sun Stove, and also check out the in-house composter for your food and gardens. There's also some videos there to show you how they work, and a link to take you on where you can purchase one of those items. And, of course, the more that you help them, the more you will be helping out Bard's Logic Political Talk. And so without any further ado, we will bring in Jim Condit. Thank you very much. Or Jim Condit, Jr., thank you very much, Jim, for calling to the show. How are you?
Fine. You know, I was listening. It turned out I had to connect Congressman Traffic and former congressman by my cell phone, so I was actually listening to the whole show. I just wanted to let you know, just kind of sum up on a few things here. I found out right before we got on that he'd been working at his farm all day. He's a part-time farmer and handyman on top of everything else, so I guess he is pretty tired tonight. But he did say he would come back. The two things I wanted to reemphasize is on July 19th, 18th and 19th, 18th is a Friday night, and it's kind of like a social say hello, and the 19th, the next day, is a day-long seminar on Project Freedom USA and on ending the IRS, divorcing the Fed, and replacing the Fed with a honest national monetary office that would be operated in the open and audited, you know, six ways to Sundays, with criminal penalties for anybody that falsified any numbers, because that's the important thing, is we have honest economists and honest mathematicians who would be figuring out what the actual GNP was and all that kind of stuff. Most of that is already available. They're just not issuing the money right. It's not that that's being falsified. It's that the bankers that have existed for the last 100 years, they've been skimming as much as they can off the top, in my opinion, for their project. So the idea is you get rid of all that and do it like the Constitution says. With plenty of open audits. And also end the IRS. Now, there's a lot of dinkering that you can do on the details, Robert, on that sales tax. And Jim is aware that everyone's got their own idea, but anything would be better than what we have now, within reason. Anything would be better. And, the other thing is that event, July 18th, 19th, is in Washington, D.C., I think it is what is called the Capitol Hotel, but I could be wrong on that. But anyone who might be in that area might want to come to that kickoff of Project Freedom, they can look at projectfreedomusa.org. Okay, that's Project First, projectfreedomusa.org. And in there, in the activities, I'm not looking at the website now, but in the events, I guess, you'll see the all the details for that thing. It's only $15. The problem is getting there for people. Certainly the $15 isn't going to block too many people from coming. And if you, one of the, in my final thought here, Robert, is that the problem we have as normal Americans trying to fight back against this behemoth government that's grown up with, I believe, the same people that funded communism and funded Nazism are now trying to take over America, first with a soft communism and then maybe later with a hard communism. But the normal Americans need to stand up against this, but the problem is we're all going in 1,000 different directions, and almost all the projects are good. You know, you might have 997 sensible projects out of 1,000. But what I see, and the reason I'm devoting a lot of my time trying to help get this Project Freedom off the ground, is we have the last leader of that generation. Congressman Travigan is now 73. He's probably the best speaker and the best guest in the United States as far as radio shows goes, probably the best speaker. And you can see videotapes of him. If you go to projectfreedomusa.org, we have the radio show, two-hour radio show that I did with him on May 4th, and a ton of videos. There's over 2 million hits on Congressman Traficant in his videos since 2011. There was a few before that, 10 years ago, the Beam Me Up 1 Minute speeches. But think of that, 2 million hits on his videos with nobody promoting anything. So what we're about to do, and I believe we got a little window chance here to take advantage of looking at it from a utilitarian point of view, because I love the guy, Traficant, but if we look at it from the country's point of view, we got a few years here. He can lead the thing, and this is what I believe. Whatever else we're doing, and as you know, I'm doing other things, but I think we need to get behind Traficant and get the numbers up there to several hundred thousand people coming at Washington, D.C., and I think he can do it. So we're going to make about 10 or 20, 1 or 2 or 3 minute shorts. Those are going to start going around Facebook. At the end of each one, it's going to say go to Project Freedom and sign up for the email list, and we'll probably by that point have email, county, state, and zip, so we can start helping people organize by county and state. And we'll also allow people to talk to other people. God willing, I'm waiting for that to go off to see what it looks like. But I want people, like, if you, Robert, want to talk to somebody in Idaho, I don't want a gatekeeper there. I want everybody to be able to contact everybody else one-on-one so that we can get better networking. So that'll happen. Then the question is, can we get a few hundred thousand people behind this project? And then everyone can keep doing what they're already doing. But if we can gather and identify that many people, which I know are there, Campaign for Liberty already has 400,000. But I would challenge in a friendly way Campaign for Liberty, what are you doing? What is your program? What are you telling the people to do? You know, and it seems like nothing real overtly that is really coming down the throat of the one party that masquerades as two-party. So anyway, go to the website, sign up for the email list so we can stay in touch with you if you want to be involved. And you got a lot of videos and a lot of other stuff you can watch there, and we'll be having developments coming up soon. And the kickoff is July 18th and especially July 19th in Washington, D.C., and under events at projectfreedomusa.org, you can get all the details there. So, Robert, okay. Thank you for letting me come in and say this. And yeah.
Yeah, Jim Kelly here. Hey, is that going to be webcast? Kelly.
That will not be webcast, but the videos will be made available. Well, let me put it this way. It might be because there's a guy that did Freedom Palooza that streamcast the whole thing. That was up in Easton right above Philadelphia last week. And he streamed it, and I think you also can see all those videos online. And that will at least happen with this, but I don't think it's going to be streamcast, if I got the right word there. But now that you mentioned, I got to call the guy that did it in Philadelphia to see if he could try to do it on that day. But in any case, the videos will be up shortly thereafter for people to watch.
Okay. Hey, Jim, I just want to let you know that Jim Condit is running for Congress in Ohio.
that's a private joke. Kelly needs to get a part-time job as a comedy writer on I would say Jay Leno, but who is it? Jimmy Fallon now. But anyway, that's a joke because Kelly didn't know that I had to have to arrange this show, so he emailed me and said, Traffic Ant's going to be on Bard's Logic. And then I said, thanks, I have to arrange it. So then he hit another email that said, Jim Conner Jr. is running for Congress against Boehner in Cincinnati. So, Kelly, as I said, I appreciate any heads up. It doesn't matter if I'm involved. I like a heads up because who knows, I might have forgot about, sometimes I forget about things that I'm supposed to be arranging. So I never mind a head up. And Robert, if anybody else had, I can stay for a few, if anybody, I can leave, or I can stay if anybody had any questions that they didn't get to ask when Traffic was on, because I pretty much know the program that he's trying to push here.
Well, this is great.
I'm
really
sure that our panelists and our audience would like to do that. But I do have Joe back on the line, so I do want to bring Joe in and see if Joe has any comments or perhaps even some questions for you. And then we'll go down the line and see if Cindy and then Dan and then James have any questions for you as well. But first, though, we're going to bring Joe on the line. Thank you very much, Joe, for calling to the show. How are you?
Well, how'd you know it was me?
Well, I had a lucky guess that you called in, and then you called back, and you're the only Skype caller I have on the line right now.
Good assumption. I have a question, because the guy that was talking just now, he was talking about how the government has developed into a kind of a behemoth, and I happen to agree with him. My particular viewpoint is that even if everybody who is liberty-minded brings everything back to the original Constitution, the way that the Constitution is set up, it would normally, organically develop into this kind of behemoth. And I'll tell you why. I don't understand why, let's say, for example, there are two senators per state. So why would senators and the congressmen of one respective state, let's say Idaho, why would they have any jurisdiction whatsoever over, let's say, a state of Nebraska?
Was that your question, or do you want to continue?
Well, that's my comment and question.
Well, can I answer that one?
Go ahead. Kelly, go ahead.
Well, I'm glad this gentleman called. The thinking when the founders developed the Constitution was that 13 colonies became states in 1776. And they never, ever, ever intended for the federal government to become as big as it is today. In fact, when John Adams introduced the idea of three branches of government, they're like, are you out of your freaking mind? Great Britain has a king, a parliament, and a judiciary system. You want to repeat that? Look what they did to us. They were scared of a tyrant, and they had just suffered horrifically.
Yeah, I know the historical background.
So they were thinking states. Now, the way senators were brought into the Senate was that each state's legislature would nominate a senator.
Right.
Okay, and so when the 17th Amendment came along, the senators got put in by popular vote.
Right.
Now, when you get, it would cause the people to be involved heavily both in the state politics as well as federal, and make sure you got a good senator that's protecting your state's interests. The way it is now, senators do these backdoor deals. Hey, you vote for my bill in Nebraska, I'll vote for yours in Utah or whatever. That was not how the founders, in fact, I had this realization a few weeks ago. I was like, oh, my gosh. The reason why the Supreme Court only hears like 1 out of 1,000 cases is because, one, they group a bunch that are similar and they make a ruling. But the reason why they're overloaded with work is because the founders never intended for the Supreme Court to get involved in such matters. When
the Supreme Court
early
was
supposed
to only be an arbiter between issues between the states. It wasn't supposed to have the all-encompassing powers that it does today. But again, going back to the way that you're talking about, so the 17th Amendment came in and they changed the way that the senators were elected. It didn't change the powers, though, of the senators once they were elected. So even though the senators were elected, and then they could be sent to to D.C. to represent the states, they still had power to make policies that would affect the rest of the United States.
Well, yeah, that is true.
That's why I'm saying, if we go back to the Constitution, which is what the so-called solution is for a lot of people, then it would still stem from that constitutional framework. It's just like saying a governor of Alabama doesn't like what's going on with Idaho, and he's going to make policy for Idaho now. No, you can't do it. A governor of a state has no jurisdiction over that state, and there's 50 states, 50 different jurisdictions. They're not supposed to intermingle. However,
Well, let's look at it a little bit deeper then. Okay, so in the old system, you really can't get too much political action groups and funding from all over the country to get one specific senator in place. You can do that now, but you couldn't do it back then because there really wasn't much control.
Because well, you only had 13 colonies, right? And presumably,
right? But eventually, we grew pretty quickly, though. You know, like Kentucky and Ohio, and et cetera. But when the states, the legislature was appointing senators, you didn't have excessive outside influence.
That's because, yeah, they were appointed by the state. However, if they wanted to, and this is my contention, if they wanted to, they could extend that particular power, because then if they're looking beyond the horizon and they're saying, why should I, you know, bother just robbing the people of my state when I can get together with the other congressmen, have them scratch my back, I can scratch their back, and we can rob the entire colonies. That's my point. The framework, the way that it was structured, gave these people power to make policies, laws, affecting everybody. And I'm saying, okay, the 17th Amendment didn't have anything to do with that. They had it from the very beginning. Now, if we went back to the 17th Amendment, it still would happen. Now, I may be wrong.
Joe, let me ask you this. What would you do to – and I guess they were thinking every congressman would be elected by his own district, and then the states –
right.
All the congressmen, all the senators would have something to say about international policy, and I guess even – but what would you replace it with?
I would just have a clause in there that says that no law made by any representative – state representative or federal representative would affect the rest of the states unless they all, unless the governors and maybe the people would, might approve. Or you just wouldn't have any type of consensus whatsoever. Just give the power to the central government to protect the borders, and that would be their responsibility, and everybody else could just go merrily along their way.
Well, I have a few friends who insist that we need to go back to the Articles of Confederation, although hard to find a copy of the Articles of Confederation, so I've never studied it. But
You can probably go to the Avalon Project and probably download it. I've downloaded it from different places.
I was going to say I've never searched on Google.
Oh, okay.
However, I would say that no matter what system you have, along these ways, I believe that where things went off the rails is that the bankers were always this crowd that's really quite far ahead of mankind. The Rothschilds, Warburgs, Rockefellers, they actually are to, let's say that they are
they have
to
centuries
money
of experience. I agree with
the
you.
Rest of the
right.
of the leaders in the world. What American baseball was to baseball 100 years ago. Nobody else even
well,
had a baseball because we were so far ahead of them. In baseball, nobody could challenge them.
Yeah.
And even now, I don't think any. Now, here's my point, though. But this has happened over and over again. Even Andrew Jackson failed.
I know. Central Bank. But here's the thing also.
One person at a time, gentlemen.
Let me just finish real quick. I want to hear your answer.
Go ahead, Jim.
Andrew Jackson got rid of the bank, but he didn't have anything to replace it with, and they were back in 10 or 12 years. So what I'm saying is if we can see what happened, now we can catch up with the bankers and get ahead of them, even if we assume they were doing the best they could, which I don't, but let's just assume they were doing the best they could. We now replace them with the one little group doesn't have trillions of dollars, and most of us have 53 cents in our pocket. We change the money issuing system so that they're not controlling anymore and have an even distribution, you might say, of credit instead of this one crowd giving all their friends credit, then we could stop this centralization of government. I think that is a very key factor, in addition to maybe some tweaks on the way the country works.
Well, we need to, in my opinion, we need to restructure the Constitution. I could have written a better Constitution. And secondly, about the central bankers. Yeah, they do run America. But the reason why they run America is because probably they instituted the public education system, which has dumbed down everybody. Therefore, since everybody's dumbed down, everybody's influenced by propaganda. If people were intelligent enough, it wouldn't matter how many millions of dollars would be poured into TV ads, because people would say, are you kidding me? You're going to run this ad and you expect me to vote for you, or expect me to vote against the other guy based on this illogical fallacy? You got to be out of your mind. But people can't think that way. If we were the Americans we were supposed to be via rugged individualism and by looking out for our own self-interest, if we were the same kind of Americans that supposedly we were in the 1850s, et cetera, et cetera, PACs wouldn't have no influence upon us whatsoever.
I think most people do not realize that we got a propaganda experts and people that are militating against freedom running all five TV networks and all major radio stations. So they're kind of like not on guard. They think they're getting kind of a fair assessment of the news, and that's, I think that's even more than the public education system, although at this point it's in pretty bad shape. So.
Well, if it goes beyond the public education system, for the people to become as apathetic as you believe they are, almost because they just developed that way, and then Americans are a sad lot, and there's almost nothing we can do.
You know, I'm sorry. I have to go out of order.
Go ahead.
This is something No, seriously. Dan Gray here. Just a second, Bob. I've heard Congressman Trafficant call the Constitution a living document. I've heard Jim Condit talk about tweaking it, messing with the rules, and coming up with these new systems. I've heard our guest with the lovely New York accent, I forget your name, sir, but you're a very, very good guest,
Jim.
Talking about, Jim, thank you, Jim,
no,
restructuring
Joe.
It and writing a better document. All right, Joe. Listen, this is something I'm really fed up with, not just you guys, with myself in the past until fairly recently, and with just about everybody I've been listening to. Every single system that's ever been created by man, including the Constitution, including whatever great ideas you guys might have, will devolve into cronyism, which will devolve into corruption, which will devolve into tyranny. There is no other alternative. If you think that you can come up with a system better than the Constitution, you're deluding yourself. The Constitution has been amended. There's a few amendments like the 16th and 17th I'd be happy to get rid of. Through a constitutional process of no convention but single ratification or single repeal, there's only one thing that ever saved any people from tyranny, no matter whether it was tyranny against kings or our founders fighting against the English or America fighting against the Nazis, only one thing, and that's eternal vigilance and periodic renewal. That is all that we have to guarantee liberty. As Ronald Reagan, who was not perfect, said, we're only one generation away from tyranny and dictatorship. And quite frankly, if you guys have no faith in the people, in the American people, if we're that stupid, that apathetic, that impossible to reach, that hypnotized by the media, and that completely without redeeming value whatsoever, you might as well surrender and go to the winning side of the elites. I'll tell you what, they can kill me, they can lock me up the way they did Congressman Trafficant, Patriot Trafficant. I don't care what they do to me, all right? Well, I care, but I'll take
you
my
care.
Lumps.
Yeah.
My lumps, sir, and I've already
proven you won't
that
take
I can
them.
Do
go
it.
Ahead, Dan.
Listen, seriously, Joe, you have no idea, and I'm not saying that you don't have bravery, but don't impugn the fact that I do, because I can prove it, and I'm not going to do that on the air, because this is not about me. This is about the American people, and this is about the Constitution of the United States. Every single fight that every single group is fighting right now, saying, well, you know, this group is doing good, but what are they doing really? And that group, well, they're kind of in the right place, but what are they doing really? Well, it's not really the Tea Party. It's not really Campaign for Liberty. You know, we've got our own group, and we want to have a little competition. I'll tell you what, the Tea Party idea, not the people who call themselves Tea Party and collect money right now, the idea was taxed enough already, real simple, and it's taking back the Republican Party, and it's actually doing it on the grassroots level. What I want to see is something on the left, the honest left, the true liberals, not the communists. I want to see them do it on the Democrat side. I don't care if it's a third party or if you call them these two parties. I like the idea of one saying, let's hold on to heritage and not move too fast. And I like the idea of another saying, yes, but while we're not moving too fast, let's do move because we can improve things. In the meantime, I've just about had it with all this infighting that I hear and snide remarks, and this is not directed to you guys on this show. I'm blowing up because I'm running into this everywhere I turn. Everywhere I turn, from local groups in my area, in my county, to statewide groups, national groups, groups that deal with various issues. Within the abortion movement, there's people fighting each other. Within the pro-Second Amendment movement, there's people fighting each other. The people who are fighting against the NSA tyranny are from all over the map politically, and they won't agree to work together on any specific action items. They won't agree to work together on specific campaigns. Well, you know what? I've just about had it, and quite frankly, I've had enough this week, so I've just taken about as much time as I think I really deserve on this show, maybe too much. And on that note, I just want to say good night, everybody. I'll be back next week.
Wait,
with
Dan.
Go ahead, Cindy.
Because I want to give you a little comfort. Can I get a word in here?
Go ahead,
well,
Cindy.
Yeah,
you're up. Go ahead,
Cindy. Real quick, I have faith in the American public, and I'm angry the same way that I would be angry at two of my friends who are fighting. And quite frankly, I've been acting the peacemaker and trying to make everybody work together every chance I get, and it's been working, but I'm just about ready to crack some skulls together. I've had enough. We don't have time for this. It's time to stop this infighting and start working together. And if you're not willing to, I will cut whoever you are off. I've said before, and I've proven, that I will work with anyone and everyone who works for the end result of constitutional government restoration. But if you're going to play games, I just don't have time for it. There's too many other people who
aren't. Before you get on the line giving your monologue, who was fighting?
Who would look, you know, seriously, I don't have time to argue with all this stuff because I've got a million things going on. Feel free to critique, discuss, whatever you need to do. Maybe I'm wrong about all this. But good night, everybody.
Wait. Dan.
Well,
Dan.
I don't know. Well, I still see him here. Well, nope, he's dropped the call, and I'll have a discussion with him shortly. But go ahead, James, if there's any comments that you'd like to make, and then we'll bring it over to you, Kelly. I'll be back in a few moments myself, and see if I can have a conversation off air with Dan. So, James,
ask
if you'd like to chime in with anything, yeah.
Actually, I would like to chime in on a few things on that. You know, one...
because I know both you and Cindy, you know, are in activism, and Kelly as well, but I know you two are really in it, you with Operation... Joe just dropped the call. I guess I don't know what happened with him. I think he purposely dropped it. Maybe if Joe was still listening to the call, he can call back in. And so go ahead, James.
Robert,
I'll see if I can
me?
Get a conversation. I can hear you, Cindy.
Can you hear me, Robert? Okay, will you try to get Dan to call back in?
I'm going to see what I can do. This is something I'm not used to. I was kind of taken off guard by it.
Yeah.
So we'll see what we can do. And go ahead, James, and then Kelly, if you want to chime in, you go ahead as well. Is looks like we just lost Jim Conner Jr. too. So I'll see what I can do with these what's going on with these folks. Thank you. I'll be back.
Okay. James, it's up to you, buddy.
Well, the thing is, our Constitution, there's nothing wrong with it. What's wrong with it, or what's wrong with the state of the Constitution, is why? Well, is it really starts with the American people, and that's by not being vigilant in defending our nation and our freedoms and demanding that the Constitution be upheld. The secondary problem with it is, and it's a symptom of the primary problem with the people not enforcing it, and there's a reason for that. You know, and I'm not just throwing stones at the American people, but you know, let me just lay this out. Is Congress and our federal government, and that's a symptom of the problem with the American people, and the problem is complacency. Now, the complacency came about, and honestly, if you understand human nature, it's perfectly understandable. Is it excusable necessarily? No, it's not. It's understandable. We live, even in the current state of affairs, with as many unemployed people as we have, we live an incredibly comfortable life here in the United States of America. We really do. And when people are comfortable, when they're enjoying their life, they become complacent. One only has to look at the ruins of Pompeii to see what happens to a people when they become comfortable and complacent. Pompeii was an extraordinarily prosperous city, but then when death was looking them right in the eye, and you know, that volcano was erupting, they simply thought, that'll never happen here. We don't need to do anything. It'll be fine. Well, we know the net result of that. It's a human nature issue, and there is no changing that. But there is still that fraction of the American people that and this is people all around the world, actually. I say American people just simply because, you know, we're from America. But there's a fraction of the population that can see the bigger picture. And those are the people that we remember throughout history. You've got Alexander the Great. You know, you've got, Winston Churchill and others like them that look beyond their own personal desires for the benefit everyone around them. Alexander the Great forged the Greek Empire, and it was the first representative government, at least major, empire anyway, to my knowledge anyway, in world history. And a lot of what America was founded on, the roots are right there. Now, we drew a lot from Rome, but if you know anything about Roman history, they took what parts of places they invaded and conquered and adopted them, or integrated, rather, them into Roman culture. A lot of the way the Roman representative government was modeled after the Greek, with the exception that they were a republic, and that's where we got ours from. But what has to happen for this nation to continue on its prosperous path is we the people, we quite simply have to take responsibility of our lives and our nation. And once we do that, once we take responsibility and understand that our responsibility to be eternally vigilant, and that's not always a lot of fun. It requires being responsible. And we've gotten because the wonders of technology and the infrastructure that's in place because of the capitalist nature of the United States, the socialist takeover of this country has taken decades. It's taken decades to happen because we had such a vibrant and strong infrastructure that prevented a quick takeover of it. Now, the beauty of that is all of that infrastructure is still in place. We don't have to change anything. We just have to get rid of the obstruction to what do the things that have come up since, that are slowing down and will eventually end America's greatness. So we don't have to fundamentally transform America. We don't have to do that at all. All we have to do are get rid of the regulations and the government bureaucracies and the laws on the books that are preventing or inhibiting, rather, American exceptionalism. And, you know, it's really what's the most amazing part about it is the solution is simple. The implementation, not so much. You know, we have right now a Congress where, honestly, if you could find one person in Washington, D.C., that's not at least a little bit corrupted, I would love to meet them. I would really love to meet them. I mean, I love Ted Cruz. He is a great spokesman. He says all the right things. He votes for the right things. I think if he were eligible, and that's, of course, still up for debate, I think he would make a good president. But
hey, James.
Yeah.
After you finish that thought, I believe we have Mr. Condit back on the line. Let me check, and then we'll bring you back in. Jim, is that you? I got an area code 513.
Check to see if he's on mute.
Well, just to let you know, I do have your – yeah, well, just check Jim, your mic is on. Okay, it sounds like there might have been some typing. I'll check back a little bit. It did look like you wanted to chime in. So go ahead, James. And folks, I've not been able to get a hold of Dan. I know he's been working his, to the near point of exhaustion. So I'm trying to ascertain on whether he's okay. So let's hope that. Yes. Yeah. So I've got some messages put out to him and see how he's doing. As I said, I know he's been working to exhaustion. So. We'll see what we can do. But you go ahead, James. I'm going to see if I can get a hold of Jim back on the line. So go ahead. I'll be right back, folks. Go ahead, James.
Okay. Well, you know, like I said, it's just, you know, we have the what's necessary to bring back America to where it was. And honestly, you know, we learned from the some mistakes, and you know there was one error that our founding fathers neglected to put into the Constitution. That was the abolition of slavery from the onset. Now, unfortunately, you know, when they were writing the Constitution, they no longer had the British Empire to worry about because they'd been defeated, and that's where. And then politics came in. And we all know what politics does. And, you know, it created a,
Go ahead and finish that thought. And, yes, folks, we do have Mr. Condit, Jim Condit Jr. back on the line. So go ahead, James, finish that thought, and we'll bring Jim back in.
Okay. And then, the thing is we've got what it takes here in America, you know, to become this great nation again. Our Constitution works, and it works wonderfully. And all we have to do is just enforce it, and we need to just enforce it and remove laws and regulations that are contrary to it. If we were to do that, this country would, especially with the infrastructure we already have in place, this country would thrive to a level that would really, quite honestly, I think would be unimaginable to anybody alive today because of technology and everything else that's come into play. So, you know, we have the opportunity. We have the ability. So, you know, let's stop wasting time and get it done. That's really all we need to do is just stop wasting time and just get it done. And it's not impossible, and we can most certainly do it.
Can I weigh in now? Hello? Oh, did Robert left again, didn't he?
I believe he did. Go ahead.
Is Jim Conda back on?
I'm back, folks. So let me go ahead and bring Jim Conner back in.
Okay, but Cindy wanted to say something, so I'm going to yield to her. Yeah, I'll yield to Cindy. So she can say what she wants to say.
Okay.
No problem. Just checking a message. Go ahead.
Okay. What I was trying to say before Dan hung up was that I agree with him on his premise that, that our problems are not with the writing of the Constitution. Our Constitution was written, as John Adams said, it was written for a people, a moral and religious people. And the problem we have with our Constitution now is, and another thing Franklin had said when asked, when they came out of the building, somebody asked him, what kind of government did you give us? And he said, well, it's a Republican if you can keep it. And so, you know, they knew when they did this that there was a chance it could all go belly up, because it all depended on the character of the people who were living under this Constitution. You got to remember, they had just come out of the Great Awakening. And as we got farther and farther away from the Great Awakening, people became less interested in protecting their rights and worrying about morals and things going on in the government, and they became more interested in their own lifestyles, their fun, their prosperity, and they were less interested in following what the politicians had done. And so we got generations and generations of people that came after who did not watch what was going on in Washington when they voted on that guy and sent him up there to talk for them. I always come back to the story of Davy Crockett when he was sitting out there and the fire was burning just down the road from the White House, and he got Congress together and they voted to give the guy some money to rebuild his house, and then the next thing you know, some farmers coming by there and he says to Davy Crockett, well, I'll never vote for you again, Mr. Crockett, because you spent government money to help a private individual. And that is not what our Constitution has given you the right to do. There is nothing in the Constitution that allows you to do that. And that farmer, he was correct, and Davy Crockett apologized to the farmer, said he'd never do it again. And I just wanted to say that farmer had done what we should be doing today. When we send someone to Washington, you have to be a watchdog. You have to find out what they're doing. What are they doing with the time that you give them? What are they doing with the money that you give them? And when James was mentioning the Pompeians, I'm looking at the Pompeians, and I'm thinking they're like the frog that's in the pot, the boiling pot of water that, as the pot boils slowly to the heating point, he doesn't realize he's dying until he's dead. And then the Pompeians probably saw smaller volcanic eruptions all the time, but they didn't. So they were very slow to react when it was a really bad one, and it just was too late for them to react. And this is the crossroads that we're at right now. We are at a crossroads where we're boiling in the pot, we're watching the smaller volcanoes, we're watching those smaller eruptions, and we're totally ignoring the fact that there is coming a huge earthquake, there's coming a huge volcano. And if we don't wake up to our moral underpinnings and our moral beginnings, we are people with character, and we're not selfish individuals who are just gimme, 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 what can the government do for me? And that's the only reason we vote somebody in there. And then we're not the kind of people that just sit back and relax and just, I'm going to enjoy my life. You guys handle whatever's going on up there in Washington. That is absolutely ludicrous for a person to think they can be in this country under this Constitution and not pay attention. They are about to lose it, and they're going to go, what happened? I thought you guys had that fixed up there. I thought you guys were handling this, you know, and it's their own fault. It's not the Constitution's fault. It is the character of the people of the United States' fault. That's what I wanted to say.
And let's go ahead and bring you back in, Jim. And then, Kelly,
okay,
if you want to chime in as well, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going to have to I got so many things piled up, and I didn't really plan to be – I thought Congress Chairman would be able to call in on his own, but he doesn't even have a long-distance flat rate system, so that's why I did the thing. But I just wanted to say that just a few things. One is that the reason I said to Joe when he was saying he didn't like the two-state center thing, that, well, maybe we would – if we got the money supply out of the hands of the few greedy people and issued money fairly, that doesn't mean socialism. That just means, like, for instance, these guys that have gotten credit to start a Target or a Staples or an Office Depot in every city in the country in the same three-year periods, they were given unlimited credit, where the mom-and-pop store was given no credit, and they've been driven out of business. So you got to have a fair money-issuing system that gives an even playing field, free enterprise even playing field. If that happened, I think a lot of our other problems would go away. But right now, when the people try to do something, they get stymied because this ruling elite owns the media. They own all the big TV and radio stations. They own the Congress because they are able to give money to these congressmen. I mean, they somebody wants to vote, let's say, to end the IRS, they might say, okay, well, we're not going to give you any, we're going to raise money for your opponent next time. And these congressmen know that 90% of the time they're defeated when they cross the some of these big organizations that have so much influence. Maybe it's 99. I mean, when Congressman Traficant was expelled out of Congress in 2002, and I watched the whole thing on C-SPAN, and I didn't know him then. I didn't meet him until 2011. I kept saying to myself, what did he do? If you're going to expel him from Congress, somebody say what he did. And I can guarantee you, you look at the book Target Traficant by Mike Piper, he didn't do anything. He stood up for us against the IRS and against other powerful forces. So that's that. Now, so the reason I said when I was talking to Joe, maybe we would tweak a few things, is because I hadn't heard all his ideas and I didn't want to disrespect him. But I agreed with Dan and Kelly, probably, and Cindy, that as long as you have multi-religions and multi-beliefs in a society, and even all the Christian factions, don't agree with each other on some really key issues, But as long as you have that, then the Constitution, I think, is about as good a check and balance as you can get. So I really was not advocating anything overt that we needed to change in the Constitution. Now, there is, I will say this, Robert, though, there is one thing we should change, that needs to be changed, and that is, I don't know if the Founding Fathers foresaw this situation where the prosecutors are protecting the prosecutors and the sheriffs are protecting each other. So I would urge an amendment where, whether it's 1,500 or 5,000 signatures or 10,000 signatures, anybody who's been wronged by a judge or a politician or a group of politicians through an unfair law could take up a petition. Maybe it would take 10,000 signatures. Then that group could pick their own judge, their own prosecuting attorney, and put that judge or that congressman on trial. Right now, when we have judges making crooked rulings, which is yes.
Do I need to send you another copy of my book?
Kelly?
Jim, do I need to send you another copy of my book about the grand jury? We have the system in place to do it.
Okay, I guess I don't know that then. But the point is, there's got to be a way to do it so that the prosecutors actually pay attention to the grand jury request. But let me just say two other things then. One is, Dan, I sounded like he was at the end of a long month here. I hope he didn't get, and I don't blame people for blowing off steam when they've been fighting a lot of battles, but I hope he didn't get out of anything I said that I don't have faith in the American people. I'm not happy with the lack of adulthood that most Americans are exhibiting, but that's why I've been fighting since 1979, for 35 years now. That's why I'm trying to help Congress and Traficant and running for Congress again, Boehner. I do believe there will come a point as things deteriorate when a lot of people will wake up. If I didn't have faith in that, I certainly wouldn't be doing the things I'm doing, and neither would any of you. So anyway, I just wanted to chime in those few things, Robert.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. I really appreciate you coming on and spending all the time that you did with us tonight, and also bringing in Mr. Traficant.
Okay, well, glad to do so, and we'll talk to you all again soon, hopefully, okay?
Hey, thanks, Jim.
Yeah, we'll talk to you. Thank you very much, Jim. Have a good night.
Let Mr. Traskett know how much we appreciated him and enjoyed him.
I will. Thank you very much. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, sure. Bye-bye.
Wow, what a show. Definitely some things happening that I was taken surprised by. I'm really concerned about Dan. I hope he's okay. Have Ken on and then Jim and then Dan. Go ahead, Kelly, and then we'll bring James back in.
Yeah, I want to throw out a couple comments. Trafficant, when I heard him in KRCE, that's the first time I heard him live, I was stunned. I was about rolling on the floor. He was so funny. He had a lot more energy, you know, and he was very passionate. Regarding the IRS and the Federal Reserve, I want a divorce, and I want a divorce now. And the way he was saying it and everything else, he was just funny. And he obviously, you know, with the summer heat, I suspect, working on his farm and all, he wasn't quite as passionate as he normally is, so I'm just kind of sticking up for him there a little bit. Jim, grand jury, working on it. Worked on a write a petition. We're slowly getting there. All right, now, regarding Joe's statement of, my feathers are ruffled. I have to go into my British mode. Oh, it's so nice to be a British chump in America. Oh, you know, oh, you Americans, you say you're British with your fish and chips. Oh, well, we do have a bit of politeness. And regarding the statement Joe made that, I can write a better constitution, I am just a little bit put off. Yes, I am rather put off. And so with that, expressing some frustrations that have subtle undertonings of my face is turning red was, anyway, and I won't add any more superlatives because then I'll have to go beep, beep, swear word. All right. So, I just thought I'd throw this out to Joe. I know sometimes he calls in, he stirs the pot, he makes this thing, and then sometimes he'll sneak it in at the end. Yeah, I agree with you. So sometimes he's stirring the pot. So that's just kind of like, okay, yeah, okay. I would propose to Joe, if he's listening.
Okay, go ahead.
I would propose to Joe, he put up $1,000, I put up $1,000. It's $1,000 bet. And let's see if he can write a better constitution. How about your constitution? You know, maybe you want to X this section out or reword this section. Or maybe throw the whole thing out and start from scratch. And I will take the constitution we have, you know, maybe a little tweak here, a little tweak there, a little more about the grand jury, a little more about tribal jury. Things about representation that are better than it is now, this, that, and other things. And we would have to, how are we going to decide who likes his version, who likes my version? We got $1,000 each at stake, if he's willing to do this. We would have to have a panel. Well, I can't pick the panelists because I pick you guys, and then we're not going to be fair to Joe. All right, how about Joe pick the panelists? That ain't going to work either. So maybe what we do is, I don't know, throw out 20 names. He picks 10, I pick 10. Random selection of whoever this panel is going to be, maybe 5, 6, 7 people. I don't know. We have a few conference calls, a few comments, and just see who wins. You know, Joe, sure, I would like to see your constitution and in me being a little bit put off, I will throw out mine. And, you know, maybe actually this could be a really good thing in the sense of maybe you've got some ideas and maybe we could learn from each other, at least as iron sharpens iron, so do men sharpen men, and just see what he says. I just thought, hey.
That'll definitely be interesting, but I do need to chime in and let folks know that there's only about 10 minutes left of the extended period of this exciting show tonight. So if anyone would like to chime in, either listen to the extended version or, of course, be a part of the show, give us a call at 51 – I'm sorry, I'm just getting my cell phone number – at 347 9, that wouldn't be good. 347-945-7428. Because if you do not call in within the next 10 minutes, while the show will still be going on in the extended version or extended period, you will not be able to hear it. But, of course, it will be available on the archive, I believe, as soon as the clock strikes midnight Eastern time. So, again, if anyone would like to listen into the extended period or chime in and be a part of the show, be a part of the archive, is 347-945-7428. So at this time, I'm going to bring James in and then Cindy. I know there's a topic you want to bring in about immigration, and so we'll go from there. So, James, you have the mic.
Just since our guests are all gone, do you mind if I diverge and from our topic and tell everybody about my trip to Gettysburg?
Actually,
Robert?
Yes. Yes, definitely.
That's
please,
great.
Please do.
Okay. Getting there was an adventure. And it was not much of a fun adventure, I'll tell you that. I flew out of Oklahoma City and landed in Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, when we landed, it was beginning to get a little bit cloudy, but the sun was still out. You could see clouds building up, of course, while we're in the airplane. And they had to, you know, go around a few of them and whatnot like that. We landed fine. There's planes taking off and landing. And everything was great. And then I found out that my flight to Baltimore, where they were going to pick me up, had been canceled. Not just delayed, canceled. And I stood in line for 3 hours waiting to get to the help desk. And I'm thankful I got to the line when I did, because there were people lining up behind me that ended up being there for far longer than I was. And at any rate, I got up there to the counter, and they said, well, I can get you there at 4:30 tomorrow afternoon. I'm like, well, that's going to be a little bit late. The whole thing is over at 3. And they said, well, we can put you on standby, and you might be able to get out tonight, but you're definitely booked for tomorrow at 4:30. I'm like, well, all right. You know, if that's the best you could do, that's the best you can do. I said, well, what about my luggage? They said, well, it's already, it'll be in Baltimore waiting for you. It'll be loaded on the plane that you get on. I'm like, okay, fair enough. And so we go there, and I happen to meet Pastor Wiley Drake. He's from California, and he's in D.C. all the time. He's in D.C. all the time. And he was also the official pastor for Operation American Spring. At any rate, we were both scheduled on the same flight to go to Baltimore. And we were both put on standby. And we got to spend quite a lot of time together. And he gets on the plane first. They call his name first. You know, when our flight finally comes in, our flight finally came in at, or the flight we were leaving on, rather, oh, my gosh, what did it leave? We finally took off at 12:45, but while we're standing in line, he gets on the plane, and I'm standing right there by the counter, and I'm watching person after person get their name called, and I finally was just, I had to say something. I mean, I just really felt the impression I needed to say something. I'm like, well, I was put on this, and I was here for a lot of those people you just let on, that have gotten on the plane. You know, they were behind me in line. Am I on your list? And the guy was like, well, no. You know, I mean, I told him my name, and he said, well, no, you're not on the list. I said, well, here's my ticket. And he's like, oh, my gosh, you should have been on there before they were. He said, hold on just a second. And I actually got to go on a first-class flight, for the whole hour and 15 minutes to Baltimore. Get to Baltimore, find out they have lost my luggage. And they said, well, we'll deliver it to your hotel tomorrow. I'm like, well, this isn't doing me any good right now. I mean, I'm out of my blood pressure medication because it was on my luggage. and I'm already overdue because you canceled my flight. So I'll hope I don't have a stroke or a heart attack between now and then, and I'll get my stuff in the morning whenever you deliver it. Well, get to the hotel. It's 3 in the morning. We have to be there at 9:30. It starts at 10:30. You know, we have to get there a little bit earlier because I was scheduled to be one of the speakers. You know, go there, get a few hours sleep, wake up, and go ahead and go. And it was absolutely, you know, that what was amazing is they were predicting heavy thunderstorms. I mean, heavy thunderstorms both days. Not only did we not have thunderstorms, you could not have asked for better weather. I mean, it would some nice clouds blowing across the sky, a good breeze, but not too strong. And it might have been in the mid-70s. I mean, it was just an absolutely perfect day. Out, and we were, you know, we were there on the Gettysburg battlefield, and they had quite a number of speakers, and it was a very powerful thing. I wish everybody in America, I wish it had been simulcast live across America somewhere on a network so people could have seen it by the millions, because it was just fantastic. You know, it was there were just people from all over the country. Most of the people there were from the East Coast, and they were from inner cities. There weren't thousands of people there, but I would say, you know, at the peak, there was just over 1,000 people, and most of these people that were there were from the inner cities on the East Coast, and they came there to, you know, hear this message of race reconciliation, and it was incredible. You know, Pastor Manning, he's just a powerful speaker. And everybody there was phenomenal. And I'm terrible with names, and I honestly don't remember them. I don't have the list right here in front of me. But it was just an incredible thing. And what was stunning me on a personal level while I was there, as far as every one of these people that were speaking, they would all have, I had pre-prepared a speech before I ever went there and only did some minor editing to it. And every single one of the speakers was touching on one point that I had made in my speech. And it was just, I'm listening to all of these people talk, and I'm going, oh, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, that's, you know, what I put in mind too. You know, but it wasn't the whole thing. It wasn't like it was some carbon copy thing. It was like each individual speaker touched on some point that I had pre-written without any knowledge of what they were going to speak of into what I was going to say. Well, they had a few difficulties with the sound system, and some of the buses were delayed. And so I wasn't able to speak the first day. Now, the next day we rounded out the first day by going to a cookout and just kind of getting to know each other a little bit better. And it was just a fantastic thing. I mean, people that, from inner city New York and Philadelphia and other places that, you know, I mean, if I hadn't gone there, I would have never met them in my entire life. And it was just fantastic because there wasn't a single person there, not a single person there that looked at anybody even remotely oddly because of the color of their skin. And it was just so refreshing. I mean, especially for me. I mean,
hey,
after
James,
having worked...
Yeah. James, real quick, I just want to tell folks there's about less than a minute or about a minute left for people to call in and listen to the extended version or chime in. So do so at 347-945-7428. So if you'd like to listen to the extended version, call in the next 30 seconds at 347-945-7428. Thank you very much. Go ahead, James.
Okay, and then it was just. I mean, you know, I came from working in a prison background, and you know, you might think you've seen racism out in the world, But in a prison, it's like all of that magnified by a huge amount. And it was just absolutely fantastic to come there and not even feel a hint of it. People were happy to see one another and everything. And, you know, and the next day rolled around, you know, because the first day was just, it was wonderful. The next day rolled around, and I was, Pastor Manning's first to open things up, and then Pastor Drake spoke next, and then I was basically second in the lineup. And, you know, I listen to my video of me speaking, and I think I need to go to some Toastmasters classes to become, you know, to be a little bit better. Although, you know, I do think I'm pretty good at spreading that butter around. but, you know, I went ahead and delivered what I had, and I modified it just a little bit, because it would have been written for the day before when we were standing on the battlefield of Gettysburg. And so I had to change the beginning of it just a note to, you know, to where we were currently at. And we were actually in Gettysburg at a public park at that point. And, you know, so, I mean, I changed that. And it was just very powerful to be able to speak to everybody there and deliver what I was saying. And you know, Pastor Manning commented later, he was like, he said, you know, he had thought that I had rewritten my speech to cover all of those points, and I never edited a word except for the introduction. You know, one thing that I had, that I did put in there is I relayed, I hadn't written in, was I relayed a personal experience I had, you know, as far as, you know, my experience with a potential issue involving race. And it was 20 years ago on February 11th, I was hit by a car by a pair of skinheads that were stealing beer from a 7-Eleven. Now, I can't stand thieves, you know, because a person can be a liar but not be a thief. But a thief is both a liar and a thief. And it's a complete lack of integrity, and it just I don't like those people, and I will do what I can to try to stop them and bring them to justice. Well, one comes trucking out of the 7-Eleven with a case of beer, and jumps in the car, and the other one starts up the car. And here comes, I see the clerk running, so I know what's going on, and I step out from underneath the canopy at the 7-Eleven where I'd been squeegeeing the bugs off my windshield. It was nighttime. I stepped out from underneath the canopy where the lights wouldn't blind me so I could get their tag number so that the police could go round these guys up and do whatever the police are going to do to them. And they saw me do that, and they swerved out of the way, and they hit me with their car intentionally. Well, in the process of doing that, shattered my fibula. I mean, powdered is a better word, below the knee joint. And they tore three tendons and crushed the vein and artery that fed blood into my leg below the knee. Well, they got away. Ambulance came to pick me up, took me to the hospital. And they ran some tests, and they just told me flat out there were no surgeons 20 years ago in the state of Oklahoma that were capable of doing the surgery to save my leg. And that in the morning I needed to prepare myself to have my leg amputated below the knee. And they came in periodically throughout the night to just try to get me used to the idea that I was about to lose my leg. And about 7:30 in the morning, they came in and they said, well, we found a doctor and his flight was delayed in Oklahoma City on the way from Boston to Los Angeles. He's an NFL orthopedic surgeon, and he believes that he can save your leg, but we have to ask you a question. I was like, well, sure. I mean, what is it? And they said, do you have an issue with taking donor material from somebody of another race? You know, I'm 26 years old at the time. I don't know medical things, and the only question that could pop into my mind that the only question that popped into my mind was, is there going to be a long-term medical issue? So that's what I asked him. I said, well, you know, is there going to be a long-term medical issue that I need to be aware of? And they're like, well, no. I'm like, well, then why would you ask that? And then, and they said straight up, they said, because there are people that have such an issue with race that they would sooner lose a limb or their life before they took donor tissue from somebody of another race. And I just looked right at him and I said, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. Where do I sign?
Wow.
And, you know, I signed that. They wheeled me off into surgery just a little bit later, and which, by the way, I woke up in the middle of. That was entertaining. You're not scary. I actually expected to. And, you know, woke up from that, you know, I mean, you know, and but if it hadn't been for that guy, it turns out, you know, that he, you know, yeah, he was of another race. Or, well, and I don't even like to use that word because we're all humans. We're all the same race. He happened to have a darker color of skin than I do. That doesn't make him any less human or of another race. We're all humans. And this notion of a black race and an Asian race and a Caucasian race, it's nothing but division that we've created in our own minds. If we were of another race, we couldn't take donor tissue or blood from somebody else that had a different skin color. But, you know, but if it hadn't been for that man, if it had not been for that man, I would be without my leg below the left knee. And the notion that somebody would let themselves die simply because, oh, I have to take body parts from somebody with a different skin color is the most preposterous thing I could ever imagine somebody making a decision on. You know, and that's really what, you know, that's what the whole theme of the whole thing was, is that the whole notion of that somebody's skin color makes them any different of a human being, you know, that they should be judged differently because of the color of their skin. You know, that's what they're trying to eradicate. And Dr. Manning, well, he's a doctor as well, but I guess it's theology, is starting an organization, and he's going to try to get it spread out all over the place to petition the government to remove the mention of race from everything. I mean, censuses, the whole nine yards. And that way we're just simply Americans. And to eliminate the divide that we have, you know, to begin the elimination of the divide that we have based on a person's skin color. And it's an absolutely admirable goal. And it's something that I think everybody should strive to, you know. And it's going to take practice for everybody, you know, to not refer to people as, oh, that black guy or that Asian guy. Why not just describe them as they are? You know, I mean, I look at myself, well, I have a slightly tan color to my skin, or maybe another person, you know, they have a light brown to their skin. Why not just describe them as you would describe, you know, anything as its actual attributes, and not by, well, they're a black guy, or they're a white guy, or they're a Mexican guy, or whatever. You know, don't create those divisions like that, because that's exactly what it creates. It creates a preconception in your mind. And that was the goal of the whole thing, was to try to begin getting rid of those preconceptions based on race. And, I mean, it's a lofty goal, and we've got a ways to go on it. But it can be done, because we are all, in the end, human beings.
Well, I think that would be a great idea, except for when you're trying to identify a criminal, I think it's kind of important that you're able to say what nationality they are. You know, somebody's been raped, and what are you going to tell them? Well, he had really dark skin. He had kind of big, pouty, full lips. He had wiry, curly hair. I mean, why can't you just say he's a black guy, you know?
Well... I mean, because really, if you want an accurate description, you'd want to describe them fully like that, wouldn't you? If you're trying to do a composite on them?
Well, you get that way. You get there with the composite, but when you're in the middle of trying to chase somebody down, it's kind of like, you know, do it quick, you know. But anyway, I think it's a great idea to take it off of all your census material. There's no reason for that. There's no reason why you got to know there's a black guy living in this house, there's an Asian guy living in that house, a white guy living over there, a woman over here. You know, you don't need that. And every government form that they have you fill out to get government assistance or do your tax form or whatever, you know, it's silly to have something like that on there. Needless.
Well, it is, and it just creates division. It really does.
Yeah.
It just creates division. And we, you know, it's time to get past that and get over it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it sounds like you had a really good time up there, and sorry, you had a little trouble getting there.
Yeah, my gosh. Yeah, and Devin, tell us what you've got coming up towards the end of next week.
Next week, well, it's, oh, good grief, what is today's date? I guess it is next week, isn't it? Yeah, next week. Now, this is kind of funny, too, because it's got a little bit of an irony to it because people make accusations. Next week will be overpasses and make them listen. And pardon me if anybody from the other groups are listening to the broadcast right now because I'm terrible with names. There is a large number of groups that have gotten together across, you know, for it's called the National Day of Protest Against Amnesty, Immigration Reform, and Border Surge. You know, the fact is that we're being invaded right now, and our president is doing nothing to stop it. If anything, he's been encouraging it. And it's to our knowledge, is the first nationwide, simultaneous, coordinated protest, you know, against all of this nonsense, this amnesty nonsense, this invasion of America. And you know, we've got just people all sorts of fired up over it. And of course, you know, we've had the boo birds come out and you know, call us racist. And it has nothing to do with race. What it has to do with is the solvency and the sovereignty of America. That's what it has to do with. And you know, and that's what we intend to, you know, that's one of the points that we make. You know, I've had people call me racist because of my stance on amnesty and illegal aliens in America. Well, it's really kind of odd that they call me racist against people from, you know, from Mexico and Central and South America, when my own daughter is one quarter Hispanic and one eighth Caddo Native American. So, no, that doesn't fall into the equation anywhere. It just simply has to do with America's best interests. And, you know, we aren't a nation without borders. There's no nation in the world that doesn't have borders. And,
right.
You know, and America needs to, you know, these moon bats out there that seem to think that we can take on the world's population and take care of them because their life is terrible. Well, we can't. Even if we wanted to, and we don't have the resources necessary to do so. The only thing that will happen is we will all end up suffering equally. What really needs to happen is those people in those countries that have the problems where they're coming from, what they need to do is they need to do like our founding fathers did and fight for their own freedom where they're from. Our founding fathers didn't run from their problems. They confronted their problems and they defeated their problems. And we, everybody here in the United States of America today, is the beneficiary of a small group of people that didn't run from their problems. They faced them and created the most prosperous and free nation in the history of this world. And that's really what they ought to be doing in these countries that where they're coming from to invade the United States, they should stand up for themselves, not run from their problems. I'd be more than happy to do what I can to help them fight for freedom as long as I knew it was a legitimate fight for freedom and not just some other rebel faction that's gonna throw people into tyranny again. And this is a big thing. And that we can't take on all these people in the United States. We've got to stand up for this nation. Do I feel sorry for those people down there? I do. But they have a solution, and that is for them to face their problems and to solve them where they're at, not to run away from them. And the sooner that they do that, and the sooner that America shows them some tough love and mm-hmm. makes them do that, the sooner that they will prosper like we have here.
And they certainly have an example in the United States, you know, back when we did it.
Well, exactly. And, you know, why couldn't they, model themselves after what our founding fathers did? I mean, it's a perfectly good example. It's a perfectly good example, and it's worked. So, you know, don't run from your problems. Confront your problems. And then take care of it. You know, take care of it. Create yourself a free nation. And if the people around the world would do that and do so with the same good intentions that our founding fathers did, imagine the wonderful place this world would be. Because the people of the world that are being oppressed vastly outnumber the oppressors. And if they would just simply stand up for themselves, in a righteous and moral cause, this world would be a wonderful, wonderful place anywhere you went. But running from your problems like the people in Central and South America are doing is not going to fix things. It's just going to drag the United States down with it. And that's why we want everybody to get out and join us. On Friday the 18th and Saturday the 19th, the vast majority of the events will be from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. If you have a Mexican consulate in your state, and believe it or not, there's 49 of them in the United States, one as far away as Anchorage, Alaska, and that was just stunning to me to find that out.
Wow.
49 Mexican consulates, if you have one in your state, go there between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. And if you don't have a sign or a flag, just show up. Numbers matter. And then on Saturday, we're going to do things overpasses style, and we're going to hit overpasses and street corners all across the country. And it's going to be a two-day, protest all across the country. And we aim to, wake some people